Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Lowe's knows how to set off your July 4th with savings. Right now, buy one, get one free on select one coat coverage interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Plus, get two select 2 or 2.5 quart red, white, and blue annuals for just $10. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, excludes Alaska and Hawaii. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for more details.
After graduating from college, I was desperate for a job, any job. So, when I got a position as a delivery driver for a small company, I jumped at the opportunity. It wasn't glamorous, but it was work. I never imagined that my first night on the job would turn into a nightmare. It was a cold, windy evening when I started my shift. The delivery route was long, taking me through winding country roads and remote rural areas. I loaded the van with packages, each with a specific address, and set off into the night. The first few deliveries were uneventful. The houses were dark and the streets were empty, but I figured it was just because it was so late. As I drove deeper into the countryside, the isolation started to get to me. There were no streetlights, and the only sound was the wind rustling through the trees. Around midnight, I reached a particularly remote part of the route. The GPS directed me to a small, narrow road that seemed to lead nowhere. I hesitated, but I had a job to do, so I turned down the road and continued driving. After a few miles, I arrived at an old, decrepit house. It looked abandoned, with boarded up windows and overgrown weeds. The package was addressed to this house, so I parked the van and grabbed the box. As I approached the front door, I couldn't shake the feeling that I was being watched. I knocked on the door, but there was no answer. I knocked again, louder this time. Still nothing. I decided to leave the package on the porch and head back to the van. As I turned to leave, the door creaked open. A middle-aged woman stood in the doorway, her face gaunt and pale. She wore a tattered dress, and her eyes had a haunted look. "Delivery," I said, holding out the package. She stared at me for a moment before taking the box. "Thank you," she whispered, her voice barely audible. "Come inside, please. I have something for you." Every instinct screamed at me to leave, but I didn't want to be rude. Reluctantly, I followed her into the house. The interior was even more dilapidated than the exterior, with peeling wallpaper and broken furniture. The air was thick with the smell of decay. "Please, sit," she said, motioning to a dusty, threadbare couch. I sat down, feeling increasingly uncomfortable. She disappeared into another room, leaving me alone in the dimly lit living room. As I waited, I noticed strange symbols carved into the walls and floorboards. They looked like some kind of runes or sigils. After a few minutes, she returned with a small, ornate box. "This is for you," she said, handing it to me. "It's a token of appreciation." I took the box, my hands trembling. "Thank you," I said, eager to leave. As I stood up to go, she grabbed my arm. Her grip was surprisingly strong. "Beware the shadows," she whispered, her eyes wide with fear. I pulled away, my heart racing, and hurried back to the van. I drove away as fast as I could, the woman's warning echoing in my mind. The road seemed even darker and more desolate than before, and I kept glancing in the rearview mirror, half expecting to see something following me. I stopped at the next house on my route, a small cottage surrounded by trees. I delivered the package and got back into the van, but as I started the engine, I noticed something strange. The shadows cast by the trees seemed to move, almost as if they were alive. I shook my head, trying to clear my thoughts. "It's just your imagination," I muttered to myself. "You're letting that woman get to you." But the feeling of being watched only grew stronger. As I drove to the next delivery, I saw fleeting glimpses of movement in the corners of my eyes. Shadows that seemed to follow me, darting between trees and buildings. I arrived at the last house on my route, a large, old farmhouse. The lights were on, and I could hear music coming from inside. I knocked on the door, and a man in his 40s answered, looking slightly annoyed. "Package for you," I said, handing him the box. He took it and muttered a thanks before closing the door. As I walked back to the van, I noticed something odd. The shadows on the ground seemed to shift and change shape, forming eerie, humanoid figures. Panic set in, and I hurriedly got into the van and drove away. The drive back to the warehouse felt like an eternity. The shadows seemed to follow me, growing bolder and more defined with each passing mile. When I finally reached the warehouse, I parked the van and ran inside, my heart pounding. The other drivers were still out on their routes, and the place was eerily quiet. I went to the manager's office and handed him my delivery logs. "How was your first night?" he asked, not looking up from his paperwork. "Strange," I replied, struggling to find the right words. I think someone was following me." He looked up, his expression unreadable. "Did you see anyone?" "No, but the shadows, they seemed to move." He sighed, leaning back in his chair. "You're not the first driver to say that. There have been stories about that route for years. People say it's cursed." "Cursed?" I echoed, feeling a chill run down my spine. He nodded. "Strange things happen out there. Shadows that move, voices that whisper. Most of the drivers refuse to take that route." "Why didn't you tell me?" I asked, anger and fear mixing in my voice. "Because we needed someone to cover it," he said bluntly. "If you don't want to go back, I understand. But we need drivers who can handle the job." I left the office.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Lowe's knows how to set off your July 4th with savings. Right now, buy one, get one free on select one coat coverage interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Plus, get two select 2 or 2.5 quart red, white, and blue annuals for just $10. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, excludes Alaska and Hawaii. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for more details.
My mind racing. The thought of going back out there terrified me, but I needed the job. I decided to give it one more chance, hoping that it was just my imagination playing tricks on me. The next night, I loaded up the van and set off on the same route. The shadows seemed to be waiting for me, moving in the periphery of my vision. I tried to focus on the deliveries, but the fear was overwhelming. As I approached the old mansion, I saw the woman standing in the driveway. She waved at me, a look of desperation on her face. Against my better judgment, I stopped the van and got out. "They're here," she whispered, her eyes wide with fear. "The shadows are here." I looked around, my heart pounding. The shadows seemed to gather, growing darker and more solid. I felt a cold breeze brush past me, and the whispering began again. "Leave this place," she said, her voice trembling. "Leave and never come back." I nodded, too scared to argue. I got back into the van and drove away, the shadows following me. I knew then that I couldn't do this job anymore. The fear was too much, the danger too real. The next day, I handed in my resignation. The manager didn't seem surprised. "You did the right thing," he said. "Some things are more important than a job." I left the warehouse, feeling a mix of relief and lingering fear. I never went back to that part of the town. When I got the job as a community center coordinator in a rural area, I was thrilled. It was my first real job after college, and I was eager to make a good impression. The community center was a hub for the small town, hosting various events and activities. But my excitement quickly turned to fear during my first evening on the job. The community center was an old, two-story building surrounded by fields and woods. It had a quaint, welcoming exterior, but inside, the dim lighting and creaky floors gave it a slightly eerie atmosphere. I arrived in the late afternoon, greeted by the manager, Mr. Carson, a friendly man in his 50s with a warm smile. "Welcome to the team," he said, shaking my hand. "We're glad to have you here. Tonight, we're hosting a welcome ceremony for you. It's a tradition here." I was touched by the gesture and looked forward to meeting the community members. I spent the next few hours getting acquainted with the facility and my responsibilities, feeling more comfortable as time went on. As evening approached, the center started filling up with people. Mr. Carson introduced me to several of the staff and community members, all of whom were friendly and welcoming. The ceremony was set to take place in the large hall on the second floor. The hall was beautifully decorated with candles and flowers, giving it a festive yet intimate feel. As I mingled with the guests, I couldn't shake a feeling of unease. There was something about the way everyone was looking at me, too intense, too eager. Mr. Carson called everyone to attention and began the ceremony. He spoke warmly about the community and the importance of the center, then introduced me as the new coordinator. I stepped up to the podium, feeling a mix of pride and nervousness. "Thank you all for this warm welcome," I began, smiling at the audience. "I'm excited to be here and to get to know all of you." As I spoke, I noticed something odd. In the back of the hall, a group of people stood together, their expressions blank and their eyes fixed on me. They were all dressed in simple, dark clothing, standing perfectly still. After my speech, Mr. Carson invited me to join a smaller group for a more private welcome in one of the downstairs rooms. I followed him and a few others, including the group from the back of the hall, down the dimly lit stairs to a small room off the main hallway. The room was sparse, with a single table and a few chairs. The group formed a circle around me, and Mr. Carson lit a few candles, their flickering light casting eerie shadows on the walls. "This is a special tradition," he explained, his voice low. "A way for us to truly welcome you into our community." I felt a chill run down my spine. The atmosphere had shifted from festive to something darker. The group began chanting softly, their voices blending into a haunting melody. I stood frozen, unsure of what to do. As the chanting grew louder, one of the group members, a woman with long, dark hair, stepped forward. She held a small bowl filled with a thick, red liquid. "Drink this," she said, her voice barely above a whisper. "It will bind you to us." My heart pounded in my chest. "I don't think I can do this," I said, backing away. Mr. Carson's smile faded, replaced by a look of disappointment. "It's just a part of the ceremony," he insisted. "You need to drink it." I shook my head, panic rising within me. "No, I can't." The group moved closer, their chanting growing louder, more insistent. I felt trapped, the walls closing in around me. Suddenly, the door burst open, and another staff member, a young man named Kevin, rushed in. "Stop," he shouted, pushing through the crowd to reach me. "Leave her alone." The chanting stopped abruptly, and the room fell silent. Mr. Carson glared at Kevin, his eyes filled with anger. "What are you doing here?" Kevin grabbed my hand and pulled me towards the door. "She's not ready for this," he said, his voice trembling. "Let her go." We rushed out of the room and down the hallway, the sound of footsteps behind us. We burst through the front door and into the cool night air, my heart racing with fear. Kevin led me to his car, and we sped away from the community center. As we drove, he explained that he had been suspicious of the group for a while. They were more than just a close-knit community, they were a cult. "They've been trying to recruit new members for years," he said, his eyes darting to the rearview mirror. "But it's always been under the guise of community activities. When I saw what they were doing to you, I knew I had to step in." My mind reeled with the revelation. What would have happened if I had drunk that, whatever it was? Kevin shook his head. "I don't know, but it wouldn't have been good. They have a way of controlling people, making them do things they wouldn't normally do." We drove to the nearest town, where Kevin dropped me off at a small diner. He insisted I stay there while he went to get help. I watched as he drove away, my thoughts racing. I sat in the diner, sipping a cup of coffee and trying to process everything that had happened. My phone buzzed with messages from Mr. Carson, but I ignored them, too shaken to respond. Kevin returned with a local police officer, and I recounted the entire experience. The officer listened carefully, taking notes and assuring me that they would investigate the community center. "I'm sorry you had to go through this," he said, his expression sympathetic. "We've had our suspicions about that place, but we've never had enough evidence to act. Your account will help us build a case." I nodded, feeling a mix of relief and lingering fear. The officer gave me his card and offered to escort me back to my apartment, which I gratefully accepted. As I settled back into my apartment, I couldn't shake the feeling of unease. The experience had left a deep scar, and I knew it would take time to heal. I quit the job at the community center, unable to face returning to that place. It was supposed to be just another job, my first assignment as a plumber for a small, local company. I was excited to finally put my skills to use and earn some money. Little did I know, my first day would turn into a nightmare that I could never have imagined. The call came in early in the morning. An old mansion on the outskirts of town had a plumbing issue, and the owner wanted it fixed as soon as possible. I loaded up my tools and drove out to the address, feeling a mix of excitement and nervousness. When I arrived, I was struck by the mansion's grandeur. It was an imposing, three-story structure with ivy creeping up the stone walls. The windows were large and ornate, but many were covered with heavy drapes, blocking any view inside. As I walked up to the front door, I couldn't shake the feeling that I was being watched. The door creaked open before I could knock, and an elderly man with piercing blue eyes and a stern expression stood in the doorway. He introduced himself as Mr. Blackwood, the owner of the mansion. "Thank you for coming on such short notice," he said, his voice deep and gravelly. "There's a problem with the pipes in the basement. I need it fixed immediately." "Of course, Mr. Blackwood," I replied, trying to sound confident. "I'll take a look and see what needs to be done." He led me through the dimly lit hallway to the basement door. As we descended the narrow staircase, the air grew colder and damper. The basement was a labyrinth of rooms and corridors, filled with old furniture and dusty relics. Mr. Blackwood pointed to a section of exposed pipes in the far corner of the basement. There, he said. The leak is somewhere in that area. I set to work, examining the pipes and trying to locate the source of the leak. As I worked, I couldn't help but notice strange noises coming from deeper within the basement. It sounded like whispers, barely audible but persistent. Is someone else down here? I asked, trying to mask my unease. No, Mr. Blackwood replied curtly. Just you and me. I nodded and continued working, but the feeling of being watched grew stronger. I tried to focus on the task at hand, but the whispers were distracting, making it hard to concentrate. After a while, I noticed a small door partially hidden behind a stack of old crates. It was slightly ajar, and a faint light flickered from within. Curiosity got the better of me, and I decided to take a look. As I pushed the door open, I was met with a sight that made my blood run cold. The room was filled with strange, occult symbols painted on the walls and floor. In the center of the room was a large, wooden table covered with bizarre objects, candles, animal bones, and what looked like ancient manuscripts. What is this? I muttered to myself, feeling a surge of fear. Suddenly, I heard footsteps behind me. I turned to see Mr. Blackwood standing in the doorway, his expression unreadable. You shouldn't be in here, he said, his voice low and menacing. This room is off limits. I'm sorry, I stammered, backing away. I didn't mean to intrude. I was just curious. He stepped closer, his eyes narrowing. Curiosity can be dangerous, he said. I suggest you finish your work and leave. I nodded quickly and hurried back to the pipes, my heart pounding. As I resumed my work, the whispers grew louder, more insistent. I tried to ignore them, but they seemed to be coming from all around me. Finally, I located the source of the leak and fixed it. I packed up my tools and made my way back upstairs, eager to leave the mansion as quickly as possible. Mr. Blackwood was waiting for me at the top of the stairs. Is the job done? He asked. Yes, I replied, handing him the invoice. The leak is fixed. You shouldn't have any more problems. He nodded, taking the invoice from my hand. Good. You can see yourself out. I left the mansion, my mind racing with questions. What was that room? And what were those whispers? I tried to put it out of my mind, but the experience left me feeling deeply unsettled. The next morning, I returned to the office and told my boss about the job. He listened carefully, his expression growing more concerned with each detail. I've heard stories about that mansion, he said. Rumors of strange occurrences and dark rituals. But I never thought they were true. I felt a chill run down my spine. What do you mean? Mr. Blackwood is a recluse, he explained. Hardly anyone ever sees him, and those who do often report strange experiences. You might have stumbled upon something you weren't supposed to see. I shuddered at the thought. What should I do? Just stay away from that place, he advised. And if you ever hear those whispers again, don't ignore them. I nodded, feeling a mix of fear and relief. I was glad to be away from the mansion, but the experience left a lasting impression on me. I couldn't shake the feeling that something sinister was lurking in that basement, and the memory of those whispers haunted my dreams. Starting a new job can be nerve-wracking, especially when it's your first day working in a nursing home. I had always wanted to help people, and this job seemed like the perfect opportunity to make a difference. Little did I know, my first day would turn into a nightmarish experience that I would never forget. The nursing home was an old, sprawling building with long, dimly lit hallways and a slightly musty smell that seemed to cling to everything. I arrived early in the afternoon, eager to get started. The head nurse, Mrs. Jenkins, gave me a tour of the facility, introducing me to the staff and residents. One of the residents stood out to me immediately. Mr. Thompson was an elderly man with advanced dementia. He had a frail frame and a distant look in his eyes, as if he were always lost in his own world. Mrs. Jenkins warned me that he could be unpredictable and sometimes agitated, but he was generally harmless. As the day went on, I got to know the other residents and settled into my new routine. Dinner time came, and I helped serve meals and assist those who needed help eating. Mr. Thompson sat at his table, staring blankly at his food. I approached him, trying to make conversation. "Hi, Mr. Thompson. How are you feeling today?" I asked, giving him a warm smile. He looked up at me, his eyes narrowing. "Do I know you?" he asked, his voice shaky. "No, sir, I'm new here," I replied, feeling a bit uneasy under his intense gaze. "I'm here to help you with anything you need." He stared at me for a long moment before muttering, "You look familiar." I brushed it off as a symptom of his dementia and continued with my duties. As the evening progressed, I noticed Mr. Thompson becoming increasingly agitated. He would mutter to himself, occasionally glancing over at me with a look of suspicion. Later that night, as I was making my rounds, I heard a commotion coming from Mr. Thompson's room. I rushed over and found him standing in the middle of the room, his eyes wild with fear. I tried to calm him down, but he was inconsolable. Mrs. Jenkins arrived and helped me get him back into bed. She explained that he often had episodes like this and that it was best to let him rest. As I left his room, I couldn't shake the feeling of unease. I tried to put it out of my mind and focus on my work, but the thought lingered. Around midnight, I was doing my final rounds before my shift ended. The nursing home was quiet, with only the soft hum of the air conditioning and the occasional creak of the old building. As I passed Mr. Thompson's room, I heard a faint noise. I paused, listening closely. It sounded like whispering. I slowly pushed open the door and peeked inside. The room was dimly lit by the small lamp on the bedside table. Mr. Thompson was lying in bed, his eyes closed. But the whispering continued, growing louder. "Who's there?" I whispered, my heart pounding in my chest. The whispering stopped abruptly, and the room fell silent. I took a step back, feeling a chill run down my spine. Suddenly, Mr. Thompson's eyes snapped open, and he sat up in bed. "They're here," he said, his voice trembling. "They're in the basement." A wave of fear washed over me. I wanted to leave, to run as far away as possible, but something compelled me to find out what he was talking about. I left his room and made my way to the basement, my flashlight casting eerie shadows on the walls. The basement was even darker and colder than the rest of the building. I could hear the faint sound of water dripping and the occasional rustle of something moving in the shadows. I walked slowly, my footsteps echoing in the empty space. As I turned a corner, I saw a figure standing at the far end of the basement. It was a tall, shadowy figure, barely visible in the dim light. My heart raced as I approached, the figure becoming clearer with each step. "Who's there?" I called out, my voice shaking. The figure didn't move. As I got closer, I realized it was just an old coat rack, draped with a dusty coat. I let out a sigh of relief, feeling foolish for being so scared. But then, I heard the whispering again, louder this time. I turned around and saw another figure, this one definitely human, standing in the shadows. It was a man, his face obscured by darkness. "What are you doing here?" I demanded, trying to keep my voice steady. The man stepped forward, his face coming into the light. It was Mr. Thompson. "Mr. Thompson, you shouldn't be down here," I said, feeling a mix of confusion and fear. "Let's get you back to your room." He shook his head, his eyes wide with fear. "No, you don't understand. They're here. They're coming for us." I took a step back, my mind racing. Was he hallucinating? Or was there something more to his fear? Before I could say anything, I heard a loud crash behind me. I spun around, my flashlight illuminating the source of the noise. The basement door had slammed shut, and the whispering grew louder, almost deafening. I grabbed Mr. Thompson's arm and pulled him towards the stairs. "We need to get out of here," I said, my voice trembling. As we climbed the stairs, the whispering followed us, growing more frantic. We reached the top, and I pushed the door open, leading Mr. Thompson back to his room. I got him into bed, his eyes still wide with fear. "They won't stop," he whispered, clutching my hand. "They'll never stop." I left his room, my heart pounding in my chest. I found Mrs. Jenkins and told her what had happened. She looked concerned but tried to reassure me. "It's just his dementia," she said. "He gets confused and scared. There's nothing to worry about." But I couldn't shake the feeling that there was more to it. The fear in Mr. Thompson's eyes, the whispering, the shadowy figure, it all felt too real. The next day, I handed in my resignation. The experience had shaken me to my core, and I couldn't bring myself to return to that place. As I left, I glanced back at the nursing home, wondering what secrets it held.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair has got style tips for every home. This is Nicole Byer, helping you make those rooms flyer. Today's style tip: when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild! Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Ooh, fierce! This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Lowe's knows how to set off your July 4th with savings. Right now, buy one, get one free on select one-coat coverage interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Plus, get two select 2 or 2.5-quart red, white, and blue annuals for just $10. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, excludes Alaska and Hawaii. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for more details.